This week's edition of If You're Left, You Just Say It Right is dedicated to my favorite founding fathers, George Washington, the father of our country, Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the father of our Constitution, James Madison, the great Benjamin Franklin, and the forgotten founder, the father of the Second Amendment, George Mason. Dear Lord, how this country could use men of wisdom and vision like that today. Hello again, everybody. This is Doug Hagan. You're listening to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. And this week, we have some new music to intro the show. You're here in a couple moments. We're going to be talking a lot about the budget deal and Paul Ryan and Barack Obama and leadership and Democratic shenanigans over this. Going to be talking about the situation with Palestine and Israel and the dark truth about the Palestinians. We have Bill Maher actually saying something intelligent. It had to happen sooner or later. Even the blind hog will find the acorn. Lots more, and all of it begins right about now. And away we go, kids, this week on If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. If I can spit the title out of my mouth, we'll get started. Welcome to Chimpsey Radio Network. Welcome to the most dangerous and offensive to liberal cyber radio network in the history of mankind. And welcome to what I think is the most offensive to liberal show ever in the history of cyber radio, talk radio, you name it. I offend liberals all the time. I, of course, you know from the Daily Gator blog, dailygator.wordpress.com. I do that with Edward Daly. And we are having the most traffic the past 3 weeks, the past month and a half we've ever had. Thank you for your support. Now, let's get right down to this budget deal. Now, heading into this thing about whether they're going to shut the government down, who would win, who would lose, who would the public blame? Would they blame Democrats? Would they blame Republicans? All of that we'll get to in a minute, but I want to remind you, the civility question. Democrats are always pulling out that Republicans aren't civil card and throwing it on us. Here's what I wrote on my blog a few days ago. Okay, so what happens when GOP freshmen actually keep their campaign promises and try to cut a wee bit of spending, and wham, Democrats, like this airhead, get all civil and polite. Representative Louise Slaughter, and what an appropriate last name this woman has, Democrat, did I have to add Democrat, from New York, said today that the new Republicans elected to the House of Representatives last November came to Congress to kill women. Yes, kill women. Not inconvenience women, not piss women off, not stand women up for dates. No, kill them, apparently. She also likened Republican efforts to prohibit federal funding of abortion, except in the case of rape, incest, or where the life of the mother is endangered, to actions taken by the... Can you fill in the blanks, kids? Can you fill in that? Nazis, of course. It's always the Nazis with the left. This is probably one of the worst times we've seen because the numbers of people elected to Congress. I went through this as a co-chair of the Arts Caucus, Slaughter said. In 94, people were elected simply to come here to kill the National Endowment for the Arts. Now they're here to kill women. Miss Slaughter, and voters who voted for this moron, if anyone has on their resume that they were ever a co-chair of any type of arts caucus, do not vote for them. Because they're a walking brain donor. Sorry, it's true. Now we know what she was trying to scare women. The fear and smear card. The Democrats, that is one of their most used cards. There's a race card, of course. There's the... class warfare card, but this is another one they use. They try to scare people. We're, you know, if Republicans get their way, we're going to be pushing Granddad down the stairs and we'll throw Grandma under the bus and blah, 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 blah. Now, it's interesting about Planned Parenthood, because Planned Parenthood, which unfortunately did, excuse me, I said their name incorrectly, Planned Abortionhood, which I'm going to call them from now on, didn't get their funding cut. And why should they get funding from the federal government? That's the question. It's not an ideological question necessarily. The question when you get into cutting deficits or reducing government spending is what should the federal government be spending money on? That's the first thing you look at. You look at waste, fraud, et cetera, et cetera. But you also look at, well, we don't really need to be spending money on this. This is what abortion, planned abortionhood gets. Annual abortions performed at Planned Parenthoods. Number 332,278, that's from 2009. That's also from the Planned Parenthood's own 2009 services fact sheet. Average cost of abortion, $468. That's according to the Guttmacher Institute. Total income from abortions from Planned Abortionhood, $155,506,104. Now their total health center income, $404,900,000. And that again is from Planned Parenthood's own annual report from 2009. Why is a company making $405 million a year receiving any government money? Particularly when they're killing innocent children. Especially when this is such a controversial thing to be spending tax dollars on. But anyway, as I said, Planned Parenthood didn't get cut. But Ed Daly did report at his site, The Daily Benefactor. Good site to go for news. And also at The Daily Gator, of course. This story about the budget deal that actually saved the government from being shut down. Congressional leaders, with barely an hour to go before federal government announced late Friday night, they had reached a deal to fund the government through the end of the fiscal year, that's September 30th. The deal includes $38.5 billion in spending cuts, while leaving the more contentious policy matters, such as blocking funding for Planned Abortionhood, for later debate. The Senate passed a short-term spending measure Friday to buy lawmakers the time needed to prepare and pass the final budget bill next week. The House passed the measure early Saturday, which will be signed by President Obama when he receives it and when he's not golfing or vacationing somewhere, according to senior administration officials. Yes, I interjected the part about him playing golf. But you know it's true. This agreement between Democrats and Republicans on behalf of all Americans is a budget that invests in our future while making the largest spending cut in our history. Obama said, really, largest spending cut in history? We'll need to cut a lot more there, President Bambi, a lot more. But it's a start. There were people saying Republicans should dig their heels in and shut the government down. I think that would have been bad publicly for them. There were people saying they should cave in sooner than they did. Yeah, I think a budget, a government shutdown would have looked bad for both parties, but I get the sneaking gut feeling that it would have been worse as a publicity thing for the Republicans somehow than for Democrats. So this is a good start. Remember, incrementalism worked for the Democrats. It works for liberals. It can work for us too, but we've got to dig in. We've got to have this fight probably next month over the raising the debt ceiling. If we raise again, it cannot ever be raised again, at least until we get spending under control. This is absolutely, you know, you're talking about a $14.2 trillion deficit. You're talking about the possibility of the United States defaulting, being bankrupt is what you're talking about if this continues. And yeah, Paul Ryan, what a story this guy is turning out to be. He is what Republicans ought to be. But one more thing before we get to Paul Ryan. John Boehner is getting kicked in his gonads a lot. Not literally, figuratively. Although I'm sure Nancy Pelosi wouldn't mind doing that. But he's getting beat up by a lot of conservatives. Cries too much. Saying he's too soft, gave in too easily. But... from the Just a Conservative Girl blog, some very, very, I think, intelligent thoughts on this. She writes, there seems to be some consternation on the deal made between Speaker Boehner, Harry Reid, and President Obama. Many on the right seem to be unhappy about this and are saying that Boehner caved. She doesn't think so. While the cuts were less than the right was hoping for, there is a great deal to be happy about with this deal. There will be an up or down vote on appealing Obamacare on the Senate floor. That is good. 23 Democratic senators are up for re-election next year. Some of those came from states that are very much against Obamacare. Claire McCaskill, Ben Nelson, and Joe Manchin, just to name three. They will have to go on the record with a vote. During his campaign, Manchin repeatedly said he was against Obamacare on the federal level. He will now have to put his money where his mouth is. That's good, and there's a good chance he would vote to repeal it, in my opinion. Missouri voted in the last election against mandates, and McCaskill has since admitted that the bill needs to be improved. We all remember what an uproar Nelson caused with his vote on Obamacare. I am sure none of these people are happy to find out that they are going to have to make this vote. If they vote yes, they lose their base. If they vote no, they lose the independents. It's a no-win vote for them, and great fundraising material for their opponents. The additional IRS agents that were to be hired to implement Obamacare have been, I love this word, defunded. That's a huge win for the right. That's true. No public funds for abortion in D.C. We'll take that. An up or down vote for funding of Planned Parenthood on the Senate floor. Again, no chance of becoming law, but it will get them on the record. That's what I've been saying. Make them say it again. Make Democrats hold their feet to the fire. Make them look the American people in the eye again and again and again on spending, on Obamacare, on Planned Parenthood, and say, screw you, America, we don't care what you say. Make them say it to the American people as many times as you can, because the American people need to be reminded as many times as we can remind them before November 2012. Between now and then, we have to remind them over and over and over. Now, she also talks about polls and stuff like that, but to me, this is a very good set of points. There's something else I want to talk about, again, before I get to the new rock star of the Republican Party. His name's being thrown around as VP material now, Paul Ryan. And, hell, he looks a lot more presidential than any Democrat and a lot more than Obama. We'll get to his budget ideas in a couple minutes here. But from hot air, I found this story linking to some progressives. And progressives aren't happy with the budget deal either. Very interesting. They think they're losing. And that's a good thing, because progressives usually are blind and will say they're winning no matter what. They think they're getting their lunch eaten for them. And they're worried that the Tea Party continues to, well, outsmart them, which really isn't very hard, but once again, the unpopular view of a minority, this is what progressives are saying, have been imposed on the majority because progressives in their delusional minds think they are the majority in this country, when they're not. They never have been, they never will be. Others will rant and rave about democratic leadership, and in fact, the process has already begun, but progressives in this country should be asking themselves a serious question. Why does the Tea Party seem to have so much more effective than the left as a movement? It's a complicated question that deserves in-depth discussion, but some of the things that may be impeding progressives include excessive party loyalty. Now they're saying, you know what, we don't have to vote Democrat. Go vote for the Green Party, please. Vote for the Communist Party. Don't vote for the Democratic Party. Do us all a favor, please. The desire for a charismatic leader and the urge to prematurely celebrate accomplishments that are flawed and incomplete. I like this. When progressives become discouraged, they're much more fun. They do crazier things, they're easier to talk about and blog about and write about. And they're more entertaining. It's like a chipmunk that gets hold of a live electric wire. It's just entertaining on an obscene level. Why did Tea Partiers win such a major victory? Money, for starters. The Tea Party is generously funded by billionaires like the Koch brothers. Again, the delusion kicking in that Tea Partiers are corporate sponsored. No, we're real people. We actually care about the country and have read the Constitution, understand it, unlike progressives. And ultra-conservative policies are given nonpartisan ideological cover by right-wing billionaires. You have to say billionaire like that when you talk about a progressive, because billionaires always think billionaire and millionaire like they're evil, like they're Satan himself. Like billionaire Pete Peterson, his network of allies and paid savants. Corporate campaign financing now made limitless by the GOP's ideological packing of the Supreme Court. How the hell did they pack the Supreme Court? Now, FDR tried to pack the Supreme Court, tried to add six justices. The justices on the court, all nine of them, and four are more conservative, four are more liberal, and Anthony Kennedy, you don't know what the hell he's doing on any given vote. He's the wild card. He's the most important justice. Those all went through the confirmation process. There's no packing of the Supreme Court. Progressives have no clue. They need to take a basic civics course. But the packing of the Supreme Court allows the mega corporations of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to impose policies that crush the middle class and smaller businesses. Again, progressives are they've smoked too much pot, or I don't know what their problem is. But understand something about this. This is interesting. They're discouraged. They think they're losing. So when you people on the right who think the budget deal wasn't enough, the spending cuts weren't enough, don't think that the left is happy with it either, and that's good news. We have to keep our act together and maintain solidarity. They're going to fall apart, hopefully, and make it easier for us to capture the Senate, increase our lead in the House, and get the White House in 2012. And then we can really get serious about heavier spending cuts. You have to be a little bit patient, people. It will happen if we play our cards correctly. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't do it. Not a good idea. Now, to Paul Ryan, who I hear the ladies are fond of. I don't know why. He's an ugly man. It's really hideous. But Paul Ryan is the rock star of the Republican Party right now. And this piece caught my eye from the Don Serber Daily Mail. So Barack Obama is going to give a speech on Wednesday night in which he will announce huge cuts to Medicaid and Medicare in an effort to save the nation from financial ruin. He's also going to go for tax hikes, of course. What a difference five days make. 120 little hours. Somebody's polls and focus groups show just how mad the American people are at this spend, and more spending president's immature and reckless behavior. Let us go back to April the 5th. On Tuesday, Republican House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin unveiled a plan to cut over $6 trillion, $6.2 trillion, or if you prefer, server rights, $6 million from the budget over the next 10 years. On Wednesday, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, more progressive insanity ahead, I'll warn you, held a press conference. Democratic Congressman Jim McDermott, I call him Jim McVermin. The room to our right is filled with people listening to a budget proposal that balances a budget on the backs of the poor, the elderly, and the children. From Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison, the crying Muslim of the House, our seniors who have cut a path for all of us to walk behind have got to have dignity in their lives as they are in their golden years. This is something that the Ryan Roback ruin just obliterates. You're the biggest pussy I've ever heard speak, Keith Ellison. You're a disgrace to this country, to your religion, to the party, to manhood. How in the hell you ever got elected to anything is beyond me. But your lies are pathetic and weak. Learn some new lies to tell, Democrats. The old ones are getting boring, okay? No matter how well this played with your pot-smoking, not-exhaling-ever base, they've got to be getting tired of this crap, too. What did Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee... Oh, what a nugget of stupidity she is. If this budget goes through, she says, you're going to see not jobs created for all Americans, but you're going to see higher unemployment rates throughout the country. You're going to see twice the national average, or whatever that will be, in the, cue the race card, in the African-American, Latino, and Asian-Pacific American communities. I thought it was Asian-American. Now it's Asian-Pacific Americans, as opposed to what, Asian-Atlantic Americans? Or stop with the race baiting, will you please? But wait, Serber writes, there's more. The Charleston Gazette quoted Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller as saying Republican House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin is slashing basic health care for children, seniors, and people with disabilities. This is not just foolish, it's cruel. The Republican budget would end Medicare as we know it and prevent millions of Americans from getting affordable health care. Again, a tissue of lies. Now, Serber notes, Rockefeller complained about the Republican budget cuts in the 90s. They weren't cuts, but rather slowdowns in spending. And now he brags on and on about how his buddy Bill Clinton balanced the budget. Liberal newspaper columnists aped the Democratic Party line from Paul Krugman, or is it Krugman, or is it this moron, I don't know. Mr. Ryan and his colleagues can write down whatever numbers they like, but seniors vote. And when they find that their health care vouchers are grossly inadequate, they'll demand to get bigger vouchers. Wiping out the plan's supposed savings, in short, this plan isn't remotely serious. On the contrary, it's ludicrous. Hey, those rhyme. I wonder if Paul Krugman knows he's a poet. It's ludicrous, and it's also, here we go with the cruelty card again. It's a new one for Democrats. They're getting to the bottom of the deck now. And it's also cruel. In the past, Mr. Ryan has talked a good game about taking care of those in need. But as the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities points out, the $4 trillion in spending cuts he proposed over the next decade, two-thirds involve cutting programs that mainly serve low-income Americans. By repealing last year's health reform without any replacement, the plan will also deprive an estimated 34 million non-elderly Americans of health insurance. So the pundits who praised this proposal when it was released were punked. The GOP budget plan isn't a good faith effort to put America's fiscal house in order. It's voodoo economics. That's a card from the past, the voodoo economic one, with an extra dose of fantasy and a large helping of mean-spiritedness. Of course, this is all garbage and lies, but the point here is Paul Ryan did something that Barack Obama didn't do. The golden boy of the Democratic Party, and yes, you can call me racist for saying boy in reference to Obama. It's an expression. Get over it. They can tell me that I'm being racist over that, but Obama isn't leading. Again, he's golfing, he's doing this, he's doing that. He's playing footsie about birth certificates with that idiot Donald Trump. No, I'm not a fan of the Donald. In the first place, if you're a billionaire and successful, you should A, have much better hair, and B, you should never, ever, ever let anybody refer to you as the Donald. Really? How despicable is this guy? I'll get on a Donald Trump rant later. I'd like to punch people who are supporting him in the face, wake them up. He's not a conservative. But again, back to the original point before I get sidetracked. Paul Ryan is doing what Barack Obama has refused to do. Lead. He actually came up with a plan. This guy is presidential material. That's all I'm saying. Not in 2012. I think VP might be a very real possibility. But in 2016, maybe 2020, watch Paul Ryan. Watch what he does. Trust me. This guy can make some serious, serious noise. Now, before we get to the music I have planned on this evening's show, it's a great classic rock song from CCR. Let me ask you a question. What is the WPC? It's not a new wrestling promotion that features midgets and topless women, or topless midgets and women. No, the WPC is the White Privilege Conference. And I get this from where else? The WhitePrivilegeConference.com website. And here's what they, the idiots, the Marxist morons that come up with this crap, here's how they describe it. WPC is a conference that examines challenging concepts of privilege and oppression and offers solutions and team-building strategies to work toward a more equitable world. Code speak for social justice. Code speak for communism. It is not a conference designed to attack, degrade, or beat up on white folk. When you refer to white people as white folk, in my experience, you're trying to beat up on them. It is not a conference designed to rally white supremacist groups. Well, that's okay, because most white supremacists can't even spell the word rally. They wouldn't even know what it was. WPC is a conference built on the premise that the U.S. was started by white people for white people. No, the United States was founded the founders are white guys, so what? It wasn't formed for white people, it was formed for people who love liberty. Obviously not the people who start things like the White Privilege Conference. Not for the mealy-mouthed, weak-kneed, spineless jellyfish that whine about racism and thisism and thatism and oppression and how evil and bad America is and how tough it is to live here. Not those type of worms. It was started for people who love liberty and want less government in their lives so they can be more successful and keep more of what they earn and have more freedom away from government bureaucrats and nanny staters. That's why this country was founded. WPC, they say, is a conference designed to examine issue of privilege beyond skin color. WPC is open to everyone, even whitey, and invites diverse perspectives, as long as they're ultra-liberal, to provide a comprehensive look at issues of privilege, including race, gender, sexuality, class, disability, etc. What? No mention of bald people? What about left-handed lesbian squirrels? Are they welcome too? I have to know these things. The ways we all experience some form of privilege and how we're all affected by that privilege. WPC, attracts students, professionals, activists, parents, community leaders, members from diverse perspectives, and left-handed lesbian squirrels. Okay, we're good on the left-handed lesbian squirrels. Good. That eases my mind. There's a squirrel in the backyard. It's a long story. I'll get into it later. WPC welcomes folks with varying levels of experience addressing issues of diversity, cultural competency, and multiculturalism. WPC, is committed to a philosophy of understanding, respecting, and connecting. I think we all know what WPC is now. It's a load of crap. It's this business of... put it this way. The argument that only white people can be racist because only white people are privileged It's the same avenue of thought, which is to say there's not much thought to it. It's this brainwashing of people, which communism, Marxism, etc., etc., rely on. They need to brainwash people to make them believe they're oppressed, they're never going to make it, and they have to embrace something completely un-American. They have to reject capitalism and liberty and the Constitution and things like that. That's what this conference is. It's for teachers, by the way, which should scare the living hell out of you. Now, some music. CCR, one of the greatest songs of all time. You can't get up and get fired up with this song. There's something wrong with you. That's all I'm saying. Enjoy. I'll be back. Welcome back, my friends. Back to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. And a story out of California. I found this today right before I was going to record this show. The California legislature, could soon pass a bill that would require school textbooks and teachers to incorporate information on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. That's LGBT. Americans into their curriculum. The Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Educational Act, or State Bill 48, which mimics a bill previously vetoed by former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, made it one step closer to becoming law Tuesday after being approved by the state Senate Judiciary Committee. The bill, introduced by State Senator Mark Leno, could have a nationwide impact if passed because California is such a big buyer of textbook that publishers offer to incorporate that state standards into books distributed to other states. Supporters say it's a good thing because it will help prevent gay students from being harassed or bullied by their classmates. Baloney, by the way. You know what stops bullying? I wasn't taught when I was growing up by grandparents and parents and elder people around me. I wasn't taught to not beat people up or make fun of people or hurt people's feelings because they were this, this, or this. I was told treat everybody the same. Kids do not need special training. They just need to be told, and it needs to be enforced upon them, that you don't hurt people's feelings, you don't treat people mean, you don't beat people up, you don't bully people. And this idea that the left has, that government has to come in and re-educate our children because we're too stupid and racist to ever do it ourselves, is asinine. Now, I don't know the particulars of the bill. I don't know what it does or doesn't do. But I do know that the left is very good at using things like this to indoctrinate rather than educate our children. I was down in Corsicana, Texas yesterday, this weekend, Saturday, for the opening of a new Civil War museum in Navarro College campus. I was there with the Sons of Confederate Veterans talking to people about history, et cetera, et cetera. They're reenactors, and it was a good time. But I talked to two teachers. Both of them refuse to teach history in a politically correct fashion. They're tired of political correctness. They're tired of indoctrination. And they said, as high school teachers, both of them, they don't put up with it. They teach actual history. And some of the reactions they get from students is amazing. And I may interview one or both of them for a future show. But it's good to see that there are some really good teachers who care about teaching what actually happened rather than what didn't happen. So keep your eye on this California bill. And again, it's not time to overreact and hit the panic button. I don't think anyone minds. Every significant person in our history ought to be taught about, period. One teacher told me history books are getting smaller and smaller. And I said, to me, it seems that they would be getting bigger and bigger since our history gets longer and longer. Wouldn't that make sense? But again, too often we're cutting stuff out that should be in there so we can put in indoctrinational stuff. And that's a crime against our kids. Now, one quick other note about this budget deal. Before the final deal was struck and the government didn't shut down, one of the brightest lights in Congress, Thaddeus McCarter, of Michigan, who's a Republican, had something to say, and he summed up this budget fight very succinctly. He said the American people, he believes, are smart enough to realize that the Democrats are willing to shut the government down for more spending, and that the Republicans are trying their best to keep the government running and spend less money. Bravo, well said, succinct to the point. And I do think, by the way, that the American people are smart enough to realize that. Now, the question of Obama's intelligence, that keeps coming up. Some people, he's a constitutional scholar, and he's brilliant. He's such a bright man. He's such a wonderful orator. Okay, he's a wonderful orator when the teleprompter works well. We know that. He might be a good golfer. He's doing enough of that. He might be getting good at that. I think a man who doesn't learn from history and continues to try policies that have failed miserably in the past, continuing to try those policies, not a sign of intelligence to me. But he had one of these moments. Remember when the first George Bush was president, 92, campaign season, and he wasn't sure the price of a loaf of bread, and that made him look disconnected, and the media jumped all over it, of course. The man doesn't know what the American people are going through. He doesn't know what bread costs. Well, Obama had one of those moments, and James Taranto of the Wall Street Journal, he had one of those moments. And he was talking, giving a speech, and a person who's actually, I believe, a supporter of his, ask about gas prices and how am I supposed to, I can't afford to fill up my truck anymore. Here's Obama's response. At a town hall meeting yesterday, Taranto writes, in Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania, a man in the audience asked Obama about gas prices, which are currently in the range of $4 a gallon. According to the Associated Press, Obama responded laughingly and needled the questioner. I've seen the video, it's up on my blog, The Daily Gator. He does. He kind of mocks and has a smart-ass kind of smarmy attitude. The president's sarcasm comes through in the White House transcript. I know some of you big guys, the president says, are all still driving their big SUVs. You know, they got their big monster trucks and everything. Yeah, I see Americans driving around in monster trucks all the time, you nitwit. You're one of them? Well, now, here's my point. If you're complaining about the price of gas and you're only getting 8 miles a gallon, he laughs, you may have a big family, but it's probably not that big. How many you have? 10 kids? 10 kids, you say? 10 kids? Laughs again. Well, you definitely need a hybrid van then. See, if you can't afford to put gas in your vehicle, you can obviously afford to go buy a new freaking hybrid van. What a moron this guy is. So, like I said, Obama continued, if you're getting 8 miles a gallon, you might want to think about a trade-in. You can get a great deal, I promise you. Well, he's a car dealer now. GM or Ford or Chrysler, they're going to be happy to give you a deal on something that gets you better gas mileage. So, here is Obama showing how clueless he is. He has no clue what it's like to be an average American. He has no clue. Now, the media should, if they were fair and even-handed and didn't have a bias, the media would take this. This kind of clip could bury Obama's re-election chances. If a Republican had done that, and a Republican were president, a Republican were running for president, the front-runner, he would be buried. If Mike Huckabee becomes a front-runner, God forbid, and he says something stupid like this, which, let's face it, Mike Huckabee says something stupid about every 10 minutes, the media would bury him with it. The media would bury Romney or any other Republican with this. Imagine if Sarah Palin said something like that. But the AP scrubbed this. I found out about this and started blogging about it. Went to some of the other blogs that were on it earlier. And you can't find this story a lot of times now. So the AP's actually scrubbed this to help the president, I guess. Though, of course, they're not biased. But that's an example of media bias and Obama's cluelessness and his disconnect and disrespect for the American people. He's an elitist. He doesn't give a damn about how much it takes this guy to get gas. He doesn't care if he can't afford it. He doesn't care. That's a little person. Democrats don't care about little people. Now, from one leftist acting like a fool, we have another actually saying something intelligent. The Red Sea is parted. Bill Maher, for the second time, said something intelligent about Islam on his show, which you probably don't watch because no one does, on HBO, it's called Real Time. He was having a discussion about Islam and the idiot who burned the Quran in Florida, Terry Jones, and Bill Maher's upset that people are blaming Terry Jones rather than blaming the people killing the UN workers in Afghanistan over this. What it comes down to, Maher says, is that there's one religion in the world that kills you when you disagree with them. And they say, look, we are a religion of peace. And if you disagree, we'll cut your fucking head off. That's true. The audience actually applauded, by the way. And the guest panel there, which included Andrew Sullivan, actually agreed with him. Now, it's true. And Bill Maher also went on to give the example of, hey, if you have a father who's a drunk, abusive, violent jerk who beats his kids, you don't blame the kids for setting him off. Muslims have to address their own house. This is a Muslim problem. Muslims have to ultimately solve it. I've said that before on the show, I'll say it again. Muslims, you got to clean up your own house. And there's a couple of other issues with the Middle East that we need to get into. The Arab League, the ones who Obama wanted to appease so much when he took action in Libya, he wanted to get their approval before he got Congress's. He also wanted to get UN approval before he got the Congress's approval. From the Jerusalem Post, Arab League to ask UN, that's the useless nations, as I refer to them, to impose a no-fly zone over, care to take a guess, Gaza. You know what that would mean. Let me see. Who has airplanes there? Palestinians throw rock. They blow up school buses. They kill babies in the crib, but they don't have planes. Oh, yeah, the evil Israelis. The Arab League wants to basically neuter Israel's ability to defend itself when attacked. Now, the Gaza ceasefire, brokered by UN official Robert Seri, who acts as an intermediary between Hamas and Jerusalem, Moran reports, the announcement came as Palestinian news agency MAN, I guess it is, reported on Sunday that UN special coordinator from the Middle East, Robert Seri, successfully brokered a ceasefire between Israel and Palestine factions in the Gaza Strip, including Hamas, a terror group. The deal, reportedly reached Saturday night, stipulates that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, stop its air and artillery strikes against Palestinian terrorist groups. You see, Israel's been whacking a few of these swine. Good for them. They should go whack them all, frankly. But Israel's been striking, killing terrorists, and this deal called for the IDF to stop the air and artillery strikes against Palestinian, again, terrorist groups, who also reportedly have agreed to halt their rocket and mortar fire. Yeah, right. I wonder who'll break their promise first. Neither Jerusalem nor Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip have announced a ceasefire, but senior officials made statements Sunday hinting to their openness towards such a deal. Defense Minister Ehud Barak said early Sunday that Jerusalem was willing to accept a mutual ceasefire with Hamas in Gaza after several days of projectile fire and IDF strikes, adding that if necessary, we will act. He also said that restraint is also a form of strength. If they stop firing on our communities, we will stop firing. If they stop firing in general, it will be quiet. It will be good, Barak told Israel Radio. Well, I've said it before on this show. Everyone understands that if Israel were left the hell alone, they'd leave their neighbors alone. They'd live peacefully and cohabitate fine. It's the Palestinians that can't stop. On the Gazan, the armed wing of Islamic Jihad said that it was committed to a ceasefire with Israel, saying it was in the interest of our people not to give Israel an excuse to launch a major military operation in Gaza. In other words, they're saying Israel would kick the living shit out of us. And that's what Israel should do, frankly. But you have a group, the Arab League, calling now for a no-fly zone. For the UN to come in and enforce a no-fly zone in Gaza, basically neutering a large part of Israel's ability to defend itself. And I wonder what side the Arab League's on. You wonder? You wonder what side the UN is on if they approve this? I don't think they will. And in the past, the United States would condemn this. But think about it. When you hear that, and you think about who the UN is and who our president is and how he's treated Israel and other allies so far, and who our president is beholden to and some of his closest allies and friends, maybe this administration wouldn't condemn that from the UN. Maybe they'd welcome it. I mean, is that day far that far down the road, given this current administration's attitude toward Israel? Now, a brilliant, brilliant piece that backs up what I'm saying, Daniel Greenfield writes about the situation in Israel and Palestine. On the 11th of March, two Arab Muslim men climbed through the window of a home in the village of Ithamar and massacred an entire family, killing both parents, stabbing a 4-year-old boy twice in the chest, murdering an 11-year-old while he sat up reading in bed, and slitting the throat of a 3-month-old baby girl. The news I heard was the baby was actually decapitated. I'm not sure, but would it surprise you? A week later, Israeli and Arab pollsters conducted a survey in the West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem. A third of the Arabs surveyed supported these atrocities. A third said, good. Cutting the head off an Israeli baby, good. Stabbing a 4-year-old Israeli boy in the chest, good. According to a third in this poll. All the justifications for a Palestinian state fall away in the face of this simple fact, that a third of the residents of any Palestinian state favor the murder of Jewish children, not to achieve any larger goal, but just because they are Jewish children. To call for a Palestinian state in the face of that fact is to advocate genocide. Exactly. Mr. Greenfield just hit it out of the park. That's what I've been saying on this show and on my blog, and what so many on the right have been saying. The Arab Muslims who approved of the attack gained nothing from their deaths. The dead children were not soldiers. They were not killed as collateral damage. Their death had no strategic value. There was no reason to kill them, but for the sake of killing them. Thursday afternoon, Muslim terrorists carefully timed a school bus route and hit the bus. The bus had been full of students, but luckily most had gotten off before the attack took place. It wasn't the first time they had deliberately targeted school buses, the most famous of which was the Avivim school bus massacre all the way back in 1970. That same day, a kindergarten was hit by a rocket. Schools have been frequent targets of Muslim terrorists. So have pregnant women. There's a word for all this. Genocide. Deliberately targeting children has only one tactical purpose. The extermination of an entire people. Had the Muslim world really wanted a Palestinian state, they could have created one by accepting the UN partition plan, or at any time between 1948 and 1967 when Gaza and the West Bank were in their hands. Had the Israeli or Arabs who dubbed themselves Palestinians wanted a state of their own, they could have had one between 1992 and 2011. They don't want a state. What they want is a state of war. Listen carefully to this next paragraph. Genocide cannot be resolved by territorial compromise. People who approve of slitting a baby's throat and stabbing a four-year-old in the heart are not out for an extra kilometer here or there. The Nazis were not going to appeased, and Muslims are not going to be pacified with partial control over East Jerusalem. It isn't East Jerusalem that they want, or even all of Jerusalem, or even all of Israel. What they really want is a reason to keep killing. A man who murders a child might be insane, but millions of people who act and think that way are not insane. They have developed a moral code that says their victims are subhuman while they are the true people. That code allows them to act out their worst impulses in the name of an ideal. Whether that ideal is the Third Reich or the Caliphate doesn't matter at all. The ideal is there to justify the atrocity. Men make laws to rise above the beast inside them, but sometimes it is the beast who begins making the laws. The Quran is the law of the beast. The law that says you may kill a man who is different than you and take his wife for your own. That he is less than you because he is different than you. The law of the beast does not seek the peace of equals, but the peace of predators and prey. The right of the beast to prey on you because you are not his kind. Now this is much longer, much more there. Go to Sultanish. Sultanish, S-U-S-U-L-T-A-N, then K-N-I-S-H, .blogspot.com. Go read the work of Daniel Greenfield. Brilliant column, straight to the point, and he says exactly the truth. There will be no peace as long as the Palestinians are in their current state. Israel has got to take them out. Israel has got to, or they will never have peace. And if you don't like me saying it, too bad. Then you're a moral retard. You're a person on the left who doesn't see the truth because they refuse to see the truth. One more story before I get to my semi-weird sex story of the week. It involves Walmart and a toilet seat and glue. Boy, they get kinky and freaky at Walmart. Michelle Malkin's blog, and by the way, continue to pray for her cousin, who is still missing, the Washington University student, 18 years old. Lots of pictures up at my blog, Michelle Malkin's blog, lots of other blogs. Very pretty girl. Looks a lot like Michelle Malkin. 18-year-old kid. And please continue to say your prayers and hope the best for this kid to get home safely. Russia wants that reset button connected to more than just a relationship. That's a headline that Doug Powers, who blogs at Michelle's Place at Times, that's the headline he puts on a story that will bother you because it should bother you. Remember this deal with the missile shield system in Europe? A defensive missile shield, by the way. Not offensive, defensive. Russia doesn't want it there. Why would Russia have a problem with Europe defending itself? Unless Russia wants to attack Europe at some point. Unless they want to keep that option open. Early in Obama's presidency, Powers writes, when Hillary Clinton was on her apologizing for anything Bush and America might have done to offend you 09 tour, the Secretary of State gave Russia a reset button. This was in the hope that the secret to achieving world peace and nuclear non-proliferation could be found in the exchange of cheap plastic novelty gifts. Now it sounds as if Russia wants that red button to do a little more than just reset the relationship. A top Kremlin official has told the United States Russia wants red button rights to a new U.S.-backed missile defense system for Europe. A move that would allow it to listen so closely to this. A move that would allow it to influence the shield's day-to-day operational use. Again, it's a defensive shield. If you don't, if you're not planning on breaking in your neighbor's house and raping his wife and killing him, why do you care if he puts on a security system in his home? Why would you care if your neighbor puts in a security system? Why? He can't use the security system to attack you. So what is Russia's problem here? Is it that hard to see? Obviously, that's for a president of the left. If I were president and I was going to help Europe put a missile defense system in, and Russia said, no, we can't put it there, we don't want it there, you know what I'd tell Russia? Now, forget it. I've used the F-bomb too much on this show recently. Fill in the blank as to what you think I'd tell Russia to go do to themselves. Sergei Ivanov, Russia's deputy prime minister, made the controversial demand during a visit to the United States where he met with top officials, including Hillary Clinton, the U.S. Secretary of State. We insist on only one thing, he said, of the U.S.-backed missile defense shield, that we are an equal part of it. Dude, it's not your defense system. It's Europe's. You know, it has nothing to do with Russia. It's not a threat to Russia. Unless you want to be able to get around it. Huh? In practical terms, that means that our office will sit, for example, in Brussels and agree on a red button push to launch an interceptor missile, regardless of where the missile is launched, from Poland, the UK, or Russia. Robert Gates, U.S. Defense Secretary, tried to pacify the Kremlin last month by offering to share information about the new system and by offering to build a joint data center. I thought Robert Gates was smarter than this. I really did. Unfortunately, he isn't. But Russian government officials have since made it clear that such a compromise does not go far enough. You know what Russia thinks? Russia thinks Jimmy Carter's back in the White House and they can start winning the Cold War again. That's what this is about. This is about Russia wanting to undermine European and American security. And unfortunately, I think this administration is stupid enough and weak enough to fall for it. Now, to close the show, on a lighter note, we go to a story I found on A Train Wreck in Maxwell. It's a good blog, funny blog. And the headline should give it away. Dude, it's a public restroom. Now, this is not about these miscreants who go into public restrooms and piss all over the seat and then leave it, or don't flush the toilet and leave a big mess so someone else, the next person in the stall, doesn't even want to go to the bathroom. Those people should be beaten with a stick publicly. Public caning. Maybe they should be tarred and feathered. Maybe they should have their heads shoved in the waste they leave in the toilet. Maybe they should be made to lick off their own urine off the toilet seat that they're such a lazy bastard and such a sorry piece of trash that they leave a mess for someone else to deal with. Oh, I'm sorry. This story was supposed to make me relax, wasn't it? My apologies. Now, the story involves, as I said, Walmart, a toilet seat, and glue. You probably know where this is headed. And it's not a nice neighborhood, kids. Maryland man, from CNN, the story came originally. Maryland man glued to Walmart toilet seat. Now, this wasn't some Walmart, sales event or anything. Police in Maryland are on the hunt for the perpetrator of what appears to be an April Fool's Day prank that left a man glued to a toilet at a Walmart store. April Fool's Day pranks are great, but it involves gluing someone to a toilet seat. That ain't funny, okay? If caught, the jokester who doused the seat with glue at a Eklund Walmart on March 31st could face second-degree assault charges, said Lieutenant Matthew Donnelly of the Elkton Police Department. Police, along with the singularly Fire Company and the Cecil County paramedics were called to the scene about 7 p.m. There they found the 48-year-old victim, who called for help after realizing the sticky situation he was in when he tried and failed to stand up and leave the Superstore's restroom. It took responders 15 minutes to remove the victim from the stall, but they were unable to disconnect the toilet seat from his body. Instead, the victim was taken to Union Hospital of Cecil County, where the seat was detached. He left with only minor injuries to his, well, to his Nancy Pelosi. That's true. His butt, even glued to toilet seat, is probably more attractive than Nancy Pelosi's face. That's probably true. People, don't play jokes like that. It's not funny. Come on, seriously. And look before you sit on a public toilet seat. There could be anything on there. You really should look, but really, don't be gluing people to toilet seats. That's just wrong. Unless it's Nancy Pelosi, of course. That is the show for this week. Good night. God bless. Remember the delegator.wordpress.com, my blog, along with Edward Daly's. Remember the Chimpsy Facebook page. Remember Chitango. Come in here and talk with the hosts. Good night. God bless. We'll talk to you next week. Take care, everybody.